The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you on a Wednesday. A beautiful day in our fair city of Nashville, Tennessee. And despite how beautiful it is outside, I'm PO'd, and let me tell you why. As the father of two little ones, a 4.5-year-old and a soon-to-be 3-month-old, which is just crazy to say, no, I'm running on fumes. I need that little extra burst of caffeine. And I didn't have enough time to grab something on my way here. So I went to the vending machine just across the hall. Saw a Diet Coke. I said, works for me. It was flat. A flat Diet Coke in the vending machine. This is when I knew it was bad. Because you know how it is with vending machines. You got to be careful when you open the bottle because you don't want it to explode on you. Mm-hmm. So I open it over the sink in case it does overflow. And I open it and it just goes hardly any carbon.
Not a lot of action.
Any carbonation. And I went, "Oh God." And then I took a sip, and I immediately threw it away.
Oh, no. So you're a snob like that, huh? You won't tough it out just because—
I'm not drinking flat Diet Coke.
No, that is the— Diet Coke is bad in general.
I think I would toughen it out. Just because I paid for it. I don't think I could just throw away a whole one.
Willie,
It's not good, but it's not ideal.
I don't like Diet Coke anyway because of the aftertaste.
I'm trying to maintain my girlish figure.
But a hot Diet Coke? Well,
not hot, flat.
Flat?
It was cold. It was flat.
It was cold and flat?
It was cold and flat.
Oh, that's
even
worse.
I can handle cold and flat.
How?
I mean, just not ideally. But
did it taste like tea?
Put some ice in there?
I'm struggling so hard not to say that's what she said to Willie, saying I don't mind cold and flat. Oh, it took every fiber of my being.
Well, you already said it.
I know. But at least I thought about it for a moment before I said it.
See, I'm willing to risk that to get to the facts of the case.
I mean, now that the show is already off the rails, does anybody have
any— off the rails yesterday.
I was about
starting off
any leftover thoughts on our conversation at the end of yesterday's show about panty rating? Anybody have any leftover thoughts?
Do we have any residual text messages from that?
No. If you missed it, you had to be there.
Yeah, you just had. That's one of those deals where, yeah, you had to be there. We can't even repeat it. You had to be there.
Glenn from Greenbrier says, "Flat Coke, a.k.a. a Pepsi." Got him! Take that, PepsiCo! But that—
unless you're sponsoring
the station. I'm going to be fine. That's right.
We love you.
I'm going to be fine. But I was like, I just need that little extra boost. And then well, first of all, there were Diet Cokes at D4 and D5. I hit D4. It said unavailable. So I said, okay, I guess I'll go to D5. Out came the Coke. Flat.
I kind of want to buy one now just to see if the next one is just as flat.
Oh, boy.
I'm not going to ask you. You didn't say what vending machine it was, did you?
I mean, I didn't name the specific
company.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, that particular— can you— nah, don't even do it. Because I think somebody else would have to have the experience you had. You can't be the lonely guy that has that experience. Maybe somebody had that experience before you. And
maybe
they did what you did. Nothing.
Maybe.
Just talked about it.
Well, I mean.
So that's why I said don't name the area that the vending machine is in.
I don't want to blame the vending machine company.
You have to. They put it in there.
I kind of have to.
Yeah.
I don't want to name names.
You could do what you did with the
see?
The vinyl store.
That's
you
true.
You could put a little post-it note on the machine saying, flat Diet Coke.
On D5.
Please address.
D5.
I did feel really powerful when all of those tow trucks were towing those cars. I like to tell myself I made a difference.
Okay, here.
Stop parking illegally on residential streets.
Okay, here's one
for
y'all. And this one may be a tad bit sensitive, so I just don't want to go all out. Okay. I understand. Like,
it's never really stopped you before.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. But in this case, I am. I understand that, like, if I'm on the street and, you know, there's a funeral going on and it's we're all going the same way, I know that I got to then pull over and, you know, let it go. I understand that part. It's like, let them go. You know, it's a bunch of cars. It don't matter because they're on your side of the street. They're going the same direction you're going. So it's okay. Or if it's a stoplight, everybody has to stop to let them go through. I get that. But what happens when there's two lanes over here, a median in the middle, a grass median in the middle that separates these two from those two? And then there's two lanes on the opposite side that is going east. West. Do I continue? Should I have to stop, or should the people stop that are on the two lanes going east and there's a partition or medium in the middle of it? Do those people need to stop? I'm asking y'all.
Was this on the driver's license test? Because I probably got it wrong.
No, it's not a law. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Okay.
But I don't want it to be very like, hey, listen, it's because I know how some people are. If it's a, you know, some laws you don't know they're there until you know they're there and you're getting a ticket for it. It's like, right. I didn't know that was a law. Oh, yeah, it was. Okay, now you know. But in this situation, this funeral, what they had about, no lie, it was almost 100 cars.
So this is a big one.
It was a huge, and it was on the other side. So I understand the people on that side kind of pulling over,
yeah.
stopping, and
so
letting
you're going
them go.
The opposite
and I'm
direction.
Going the opposite way, and everybody stops right there. And
going
I'm
the
like,
opposite way?
Yeah, going. I'm like,
and there's a median.
There's a median in the middle.
No, you guys should know.
I'm like,
that's crazy.
Y'all keep driving. Just keep going. You can drive. You can slow up. I get that, but don't completely stop. People got things to do. People got to go to work. People got doctor's appointments. Somebody may be having a baby. Who knows? And you completely stop. And it's like, what are y'all doing?
I don't see a reason to stop.
Yeah, I don't either. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't the only person.
One texter says, no, you shouldn't have to stop, Derek.
Exactly. Thank you. So I'm looking at all these people like, why are y'all stopping? Am I the only crazo that think you should proceed slowly but not stop? And then those same people, you know what? There was a 20-mile-per-hour school zone, and the flashing light was flashing. You know what those dammits did? They went 30 miles. They were gone. And I'm like, y'all stopped for a funeral, but y'all sped up in a school zone. Who does that?
Willie, anything you want to get off your chest?
I feel like Derek is in the right here.
Thank you, Willie.
And
thank you.
I'm just glad he held back.
Yeah, I held back. Just a little.
He held back until he found out that it was the rule. And then he let him
then
have
I found
it.
Out you were with me. Yeah. I'm like, yes, let's go.
Then he put the car in the next gear.
Exactly.
Now, I do have something that may lift your spirits.
Okay.
An exciting announcement within
the
past couple of hours. Cam Ward will be among those featured in the next season of Netflix's Quarterback series. Season 3 debuts July 14th. In addition to Ward, the cameras also went behind the scenes with Jaden Daniels in Washington, Baker Mayfield in Tampa, and Joe Boy, Joe Flacco.
Why is Joe on there?
Why
I
not?
This is the elder statesman in the NFL, so okay. I get it. 20 years, hasn't it been? All close
Man.
To it.
And he's likely the backup, right?
Yeah. He's the LeBron James of the NFL right now.
Where is he now?
Is it Cincinnati?
Is he still in Cincinnati?
He may be with Cincinnati, or he signed back with another team he was previously on, excuse me.
With the Browns? Did he go back to the Browns?
No.
I don't remember.
I don't think he's been with the Browns.
He's been all over the place. But it's your boy, Joe Flacco. As Jim Wyatt notes, while following Ward in 2025, cameras focused on Ward's work as he stepped into the spotlight after being selected with the first overall pick.
He's still with Cincinnati.
Yep, there we go. Cincinnati.
First overall pick in the 2025 NFL Draft. I am awaiting our first non-sarcastic text, 615-737-1025, of someone saying, well, that's the reason Cam Ward struggled in his rookie year, because he was too busy preening for the cameras for Netflix. Anybody out there? Anybody?
I'm sure there is somebody out there that's saying it. Jaden Daniels did it too. Well, he got hurt.
Yeah, he was hurt. So he had more time to do it.
So when we see this, it's going to be last year's stuff. It's not a week to week chronicling this coming season.
No, it's last season.
It was last season.
No.
While following Ward in 2025.
Why would I really want to watch that?
I do. See what he was going through then. See what the team was
I think those shows are most intriguing when it's following somebody during the course of the current season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of hard. Well, I guess you have to do it week by week.
Yeah, but that's how Hard Knocks basically works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Hard Knocks is during.
But it's different. But it's a different
like there's
sort of.
The hockey one right now, they're following the Sabres. Mm-hmm. Through their playoff run, which is, I think, really cool. Like, that's compelling to me. Watching something from last season is not appealing to me.
You don't want to see, like...
Well, don't they do film breakdown on the show? Does he... I
haven't seen it yet.
I haven't watched any of the quarterback series on Netflix.
No, I haven't
either.
Shame
on me, I guess.
I mean, now I have a reason to watch it, because Cam Ward... But wouldn't you want to know, like... Because these are some of the questions that we ask during the season. You know, what is Cam going through and stuff like that. Wouldn't you, like, it would be intriguing from that standpoint. Those questions that we were asking.
Callahan getting fired in the middle of it, I guess.
How did Cam react to that, like, truly? So I think this year, that last year in particular, it may be interesting because of what he went through as a young quarterback.
It can add some more context to the things we discussed last season. Plus, it's coming out in mid-July when it's hard to come up with things to talk about. So
we'll milk it for all it's worth.
Yes. We'll angle it until we can't angle it no more.
Absolutely. All right. There are many texters who want to respond to what you had to say, Derek.
Okay.
One texter says, I'm with Derek. I ain't got no time for dead people.
I ain't mean it like that. I'm just
saying.
Trying
to get Derek in trouble.
Yes. Don't get me in trouble. If I'm on the same side of the street, then yes.
There's going to be a big headlock on Mason, disrespectful to funerals.
And that is not the case.
D-Mace does not like funerals.
I mean, I really don't. Who does, in a sense? But it happens. It's life.
Gunner says, all it takes is one person starting that, then everyone else just follows suit because they feel like they have to.
Yep.
Jeremy says, if you don't have to stop for a school bus or emergency vehicle, then you shouldn't stop for a funeral procession. But you do have to stop for a school bus.
Yes.
I stopped for a school bus on my way here.
No, I guess he's saying if it's moving, you don't have to, you know, you just, because say if it's coming opposite direction, nobody stops because there's a school bus coming. I think that's how he meant it. Maybe he probably meant it by, when they put out that big red stop thing, you got to stop, man.
It happened to me on my way here. I was driving the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. The school bus stopped. The little stop sign came out. I stopped. You got to stop.
Yeah.
So
I'm not.
I think we can go with Derek doesn't like dead people.
Oh, wow. I didn't say that, man. I mean,
with the magic of editing, we can make you say anything
we want. Right. That's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
615-737-1025. One texter says, I guarantee you the dead person didn't care if you stop or not.
Probably not. As Mike Vrabel says, probably not.
That's one way to say it. 615-737-1025. Cam Ward, a part of the Netflix series Quarterback. It followed him last season. It debuts in mid-July. Your thoughts on that? It's Cam Ward, Jaden Daniels, Baker Mayfield, and Joe Flacco. An eclectic group.
It pretty much is. You got some two young guys and two older guys.
Yeah.
I think it will be intriguing from the standpoint because you had two narrative storylines going on. You had a guy coming off a damn near MVP season a prior year, rookie of the year.
Mm-hmm. Gets hurt.
Pro Bowl. I think he was all pro. He ends up getting hurt the next following season. The team tanks, not on purpose, but they're bad without him. That whole dynamic between him and the team and then Cam Ward, the coaching change. you know, everything that went on during the season, the injuries, and then the last game of the season, he gets injured. I think those storylines are things that, you know, people are intrigued by from the simple fact of, I want to know what was going on at the minute it happened, like all the stuff that happened.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, as you all know, the NFL schedule gets released tomorrow evening, and we're all excited about it. But a friend of the show has a really interesting analysis of just how much strength of schedule can truly impact an NFL team's season. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Today, the Nashville Sounds take on the Iowa Cubs at First Horizon Park. First pitch is at 6:35. Catch all of the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Social Cantina. That was friend of the show, Connor Orr, on the MMQB podcast.
Connor Orr is a friend.
He is a friend.
You like that song, don't you?
It's a great song.
This was in the countdown in this week in 1981. Yeah, I know this because I listened to the countdown.
Did you back
driving
then?
Back Casey from Ohio. Kasem? It was a Casey. Well, back was then it was Casey Kasem. Yeah, now it's the VJs from MTV do it on the 80s channel. It's good.
Great song. So that was Connor.
His only number one hit.
Was it?
Rick Springfield.
Wow. Sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
That's proceed. Okay. Where can I find a woman like that?
Oh, you're going to get yourself.
I mean, she lives in my house. Wink. Love you, honey. All right.
Oh,
all
my
right.
Oh, my that goodness. Was, clip that one, please.
That was Connor Orr of the MMQB podcast, Sports Illustrated, friend of the show, talking about the schedule. He wrote a story published today on SI.com with the headline, "The NFL has a massive amount of power in how it builds the schedule. When the full slate of 272 games is released Thursday, we will see how the league itself can put its thumb on the scale to affect all 32 teams." So here are some notes from Connor Orr, some of which you just heard in that clip. Among the 11 teams with the easiest schedules in the NFL last year in terms of opponent strength of schedule, because there was a tie at number 10, only three missed the playoffs. The team with the easiest schedule, the Patriots, made it to the Super Bowl. Of the five teams with the best net rest differential, a metric that takes into account the rest between games that each team has coming into the matchup, three of the five best teams reached the playoffs, and one, the Seahawks, won the Super Bowl. Meanwhile, among the teams with the worst net rest differentials, the Commanders had arguably the most disappointing 2025 season, and the Raiders ended up with the number one pick. Only one of the teams with the six worst net rest differentials, the Bills, made the playoffs, and they were clearly gassed. Connor Orr mentions only two of the 10 teams with the hardest strength of schedule, the Rams and Texans, made the playoffs.
To me, that's incredible. That is really telling. And I don't know if there's anything in that article, because they didn't cover it on the podcast that I heard, how that compares year to year. But I think it's been determined that the Patriots had one of the easiest schedules in NFL history.
No doubt.
Last year. Like, that's a fact. That's not anybody's opinion. That's just how it fell. But 8 out of 10 teams that had the easiest schedules made the playoffs, that is huge. And basically 8 out of 10 that had the hardest schedules missed the playoffs, that tells you something.
Now, that was, are they taking into account, you know, when they say the hardest schedule, you know, prior records and making that an indicator of if the schedule is going to be hard or not? Because the articles we read the other day was they were using something totally different.
So I think this was retro looking back.
Yes.
Okay. So
yes, this was retroactive.
Because
I believe.
You look at the NFL, just like any other sports, hockey in particular, basketball too. But I'm thinking about these physical where you're just constantly up and down in basketball. So let's throw basketball in there. These sports are the longer they go, the more physical they get, it seems, and the more likely you are to incur an injury on from a you know, maybe a special teams guy, second line guy, or front line guy, or as we've seen in the Commander's case and Kansas City's case, they lost their starting quarterback. Minnesota dealt with injury too. J.J. McCarthy, he was injured throughout the season. And he just played bad too. So when you add all of that in, what probably started out as a easy schedule becomes a much harder schedule for the team with the injuries. Now, for the team that started off with the hard schedule, you run into Kansas City at the end of the season or last three or four games, they don't have their guy. So now that went from a hard schedule to a lighter schedule. So that's just based on strength schedule. But in that, once you get into that middle part of the season, that's when teams truly separate themselves from one another. Not just because of ability, but because of it's a war of attrition. We need rest. And when you have teams that are playing seem like these back-to-back games, Sunday, Thursday, then they play the next Sunday. If you play a few of those, come the end of the season, you're already beat up. That means a lot.
It will be interesting to see because, look, when the Titans schedule is released tomorrow, we're going to go through it. Y'all are going to be excited about it. But it's worth looking into the minutia of the schedule. Consider last season. The Titans were supposed to have one of the easiest schedules in the NFL last season. It ended up, by some metrics, being the hardest schedule in the NFL last season. The Titans played 10 of their 17 games against teams that made the playoffs. They went 0-10 in those games, by the way. But I think I found the same list Connor Orr was using for net rest differential from Warren Sharp. The Titans had one of the worst differentials in the NFL last season. -6, by the way, the worst team, the Raiders. -19 from a net rest differential. So the Titans did not get any help in the schedule in terms of playing tired teams. So, for example, when you're evaluating Cam Ward's rookie season, you have to take all of this into account. Mm-hmm. Some of you will think we're making excuses for Cam Ward. And Cam Ward had an up-and-down rookie season. But if you aren't including this context when discussing Cam Ward's rookie year, you're not being completely honest about your evaluation. We went through all of the defenses he played last season, a lot of the best defenses in the NFL. So I am really interested, once the NFL schedules come out and people such as Warren Sharp and Connor Orr dig into the numbers, I'm curious to see if the Titans have an actually easy schedule this season, because last year it was anything but when it was supposed to.
I don't think it can possibly be harder than last year. As we talked about yesterday, you can't know. You can try. You can look at a schedule in May and say this looks easier or looks harder. You can't know until that schedule comes out, or until you start playing week to week and you start figuring out, hey, you played this team and their quarterback was hurt, or you played a team that looked easy on paper that's overachieving, or maybe you catch a team when you're a little bit hurt in terms of missing three or four key guys. That is something you cannot predict that is going to happen. But I think in a general sense, I cannot imagine it being tougher than it was last year. And of course, one thing that should be pointed out, back in the day when there were less divisions and a couple less teams, there were more games that were based on where you finished in the standings. So if you finished fifth in your division, back when divisions had as many as five teams, you played three or four other fifth place teams. That is different. Now you only play two games against teams in other, or maybe three, I guess, now that there's 17 games. There's not that many games that are determined by finishing last. So it really comes down to the two divisions you are going head-to-head with. Mm-hmm. So if you draw a tougher division or a weaker division, that makes a big difference.
So this season for the Titans, it's the NFC East, I believe. They play the Commanders, Cowboys, Giants, and Eagles.
Well, it depends on, you know, it could end up, it can be a tough division. It could be not a tough division. How does, you know, Jaden Daniels come back from his injury? Is the New York Giants a must-improve team now that John Harbaugh is the head coach? So there are going to be other factors. Philadelphia, are they going to bounce back from their disappointing season last year? So it goes in possibly looking like a lighter schedule, but then it may end up being one of their toughest schedules. Not only – here's the crazy part about it, and we were trying to explain this to people last year just about every week, and people took it as, oh, well, y'all making excuses for these guys. No, it's reality. Not only now that we see they had one of the worst rest differentials, they had the hardest schedule at the beginning of the season than anybody. So a team with a hard schedule and ain't getting no rest ultimately, with a rookie quarterback and a coach that got fired, that's not a good recipe.
Well, let's take an example of a division they played last year. They played the AFC West. So before the season, I don't think you would, or a year ago in May, you're looking at it probably thinking, all right, you got the Cardinals and you got the Seahawks. Those two teams last year didn't look all that great. Mm-hmm. 49ers and Rams, okay, pretty tough. The Rams, I think, were even better than people thought they were going to be. They were arguably as good as anybody last year. They played a tough schedule. They were one of the teams that had one of the toughest schedules and still made the playoffs and nearly went to the Super Bowl. In fact, if they had hosted that game against the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game, do they win that game? Maybe. So they were good enough to win it. I'm not sure I would have sat here last May and said, yeah, I think the Rams might be the best team in football. But they were among them. The Seahawks, we know, were the champions. Nobody thought they were going to win the Super Bowl. So in May, if you're looking at the Titans' strength of schedule, you're like, ah, Seahawks, winnable game, maybe. Especially at home, not the case. And then, of course, the 49ers were still a pretty darn good team.
There was an interesting part of Connor Orr's article, Derek, that stood out to me. He mentioned all of the broadcasters, Amazon, NBC, CBS, Fox, wanting the same teams, wanting the same star players. And that's why a team such as the Chiefs plays what? What did he say?
Five
primetime games within the first 8 weeks of the season, because those networks want Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and by extension Taylor Swift. But here's something he wrote that I found interesting. He says, quote, if people will watch anyway, why not put the Raiders and Panthers on Monday Night Football? If people will watch anyway, why do we need to grasp the throat of last year's ascending young quarterback, I believe he's referring to Jaden Daniels, and apply pressure until a loss of consciousness is achieved? If people are going to watch anyway, why bind Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, and Patrick Mahomes together with a rope like a trioka, I think that's the right way to pronounce that word, of kidnap victims in the trunk of an old Nissan Pathfinder? Like,
well, okay, why would the league allow Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs to be rolled out there that many times early? That's a crime against the Chiefs.
No, they do.
Because the league is going to, because if you go by Connor Orr's premise, the people are going to watch anyway. They screwed the Chiefs. That took a huge toll on them. I remember thinking that last year. Like they were, one of those games was in Europe early. Then they had the Thursday night. They had a lot of tough matchups there.
Well, the article states it. I mean, these streaming networks, they want the guy on their networks. Everybody's vying.
But don't
and fighting
you have to, as a league commissioner,
guy,
say no?
You should, but
I'm not putting them through that. That's
no,
unfair.
But it's about money. If they were thinking that way, they wouldn't be trying to add another game to the schedule. So we know that was blown out of the water as far as them worrying about whether, you know, a team will be exhausted at the end of the season because they played too many primetime games. But this is what, not necessarily the people, because listen, Kansas City, New York fans don't want to see, you know, Patrick Mahomes on television every week. They just don't. Titan fans don't want to see, you know, Lamar Jackson on television every week. I mean, I don't mind because I like Baltimore, but I like Tennessee too. So, but everybody's not like me, you know. So my thing, especially when this all came out, like yesterday, why did the league choose to go away from a format that highlighted every team? Why? You're about making money for the league. Well, highlight some of your teams. We don't know, because that Kansas City game that you put on, it looked like a barn burner. It ended up being a dud because your quarterback wasn't playing. You know, you're going to have games like that. Maybe You didn't think Seattle was going to be great last year. You throw them on television once or twice, you see how good they are, then it's okay. We can flex them. We can move them around. But to the excuse sort of is, this is what, you know, the people want to see. No. People want to see good games, but people want to see their team too. People want to see their city highlighted on the national stage too. So I just thought that was wrong when the league decided to sort of, we're not going to grant every team in the league, you know, an opportunity to play on national television. Why not?
Quickly, Craig on our text line says, any other job in America, your employer doesn't care about circumstances. They care about results. As far as I'm concerned, Cam used his free pass. If he ends up playing five of the top six defenses this year, too bad. I expect results. Too many people in this town want to just write excuse after excuse for the Titans and the Predators. And as a season ticket holder, I'm over it.
I mean, you have your right to feel that way, but we're talking about a guy that was a rookie last year. A rookie. A guy that dealt with a coach being fired. Seemed like the whole offensive staff was overhauled, it seemed. They had so much going on that, you know, he's trying to be a leader of a group that don't have many of them. And their head coach that was supposed to be their supreme leader, he gets fired. Then the interim coach. So, yeah, I'm going to give him some slack. But you are right. If he does play a tough schedule this season, then it would have been the team's fault as well as his if there's any, like, if he takes two or three steps back, then that's everybody's fault, his included.
615-737-1025. Just something to chew on tomorrow as you look at the Titans schedule once it's released. Just keep all of these things in mind as you're trying to figure out how well the Titans could do this season when you look at their schedule once it's in order tomorrow. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Mitch Light from The Athletic will join us. We'll get into college football, some Vandy boys, and more with our friend Mitch coming up next. 615-737-1025. Join the Chase and Big Joe show this Friday for the grand opening of Goodwood Nashville and their brand new location on 219 Lafayette Street. Chase and Joe will be giving away tickets to see Nashville Smash of the Team Boxing League take on the Boston Butchers at Municipal Auditorium on May 23rd. Goodwood Nashville is the place to go for hardwood lumber with white oak, walnut, maple, poplar, and many more. They have it all. 15,000 square foot warehouse that you need to see. Visit them online at goodwoodnashville.com. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025, the game. One minor note here. I feel shame. During my read before the break, I mispronounced Lafayette Street, as in 219 Lafayette Street, where the Chase and Big Joe show will be on Friday for the grand opening of Goodwood Nashville. I said Lafayette. I am so sorry.
Lafayette.
I am so sorry.
Well, as we know,
Lafayette.
That's kind of how you're supposed to say it, yes. But the local lingo. Yeah,
I've been living here long enough that I should be able
I would
to
say yes.
correctly
yes.
pronounce it. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mitch Light from The Athletic. Hello, Mitch. How are you?
I'm good. And as I, you know, grew up in the Northeast, it's Lafayette, the Lafayette Leopards.
right,
exactly.
There, so I don't think they're the Lafayette Leopards.
Shout
I'm
out,
with you. I'm
shout
with you.
Out to the Patriot League, Lafayette.
Exactly.
Shout
oh, yeah.
out.
I was almost went to Lehigh. I was almost a Patriot League alum.
Oh,
so.
There should yeah. be more of us. All the yes, Patriot Leaguers.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So
we could be talking about Patriot League in these weekly sessions, although I probably wouldn't be on your show because I probably wouldn't live here, and that's a whole other sliding door.
That is true. Let me ask you this question to start off, Mitch. Why does everybody hate Ole Miss so much?
It is. I mean, I love the phrase taking strays. I don't know if they're strays. They're just flat-out attacks on Ole Miss. It's just kind of funny that it all happened this week, and at least Lane Kiffin had coached there, and it's a topic like at the top of his mind. I'm not excusing what he said on that, but for Sark to come out and just say it like that, and of all the schools to pick, it's just kind of funny that he did that. And I don't know if you read Joe Rexroad's column today, kind of ripping on Sark about coaches just complaining about everything, but he said Sark is trying to get Texas to pull. He called it a rodeo Ivy. I thought that was pretty funny, like Ivy League. So Yeah, so just eventful week for Ole Miss for doing absolutely nothing.
They were just there.
They just happened to be there. But let me ask you about Lane Kiffin's comments to, of all publications, Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
We talked about this yesterday, and Lane Kiffin, since those comments were published, has, I think, apologized for them in multiple outlets. And he has claimed that the comments weren't calculated. And we all think that's a bit rich, because if there's one word I would use to describe Lane Kiffin, it's calculated. So just what do you make of the substance of what he said and the fact that apparently, if you listen to the author of the Vanity Fair story, Chris Smith, he was on the Paul Feinbaum show.
Yeah.
He said he didn't ask Lane Kiffin any sort of question to elicit that response. He just brought it up himself. So what do you make of all of this and the fallout from Kiffin's comments?
Yeah, that's what I was going to lead with. Like, if I were interviewed for a magazine story, I might say something dumb because I'm not used to talking about myself and all that. But, like, Lane Kiffin, these coaches, they're interviewed so much, they're so guarded, there's no way he was just like, oh, you know what? It's easier to recruit at LSU, and here's why. Like, and he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't asked that. So he meant to say it. He's trying to divert attention. I don't even know. I mean, just it's absurd that he just keeps saying things to anger Ole Miss like that. And you guys might have talked about this in detail. It's, you know, Ole Miss obviously has its history of racial issues. You could say that probably at every SEC school. So for him to say, it's not like he took a job at Michigan State or Michigan and then just talked about how it was difficult to recruit black athletes in the South. It's been that way at certain schools in SEC country for years. Willie, you know, when we were in college, remember Carlos Thomas?
I mentioned Carlos yesterday on the show. Yeah.
I wrote a story on him in The Hustler, you know, after he spoke to Larry Woody from the Tennessean about him. He was in a class with him, and I asked him about it, and he went off about why a kid from Memphis, why he would not go play at Ole Miss. So it's not like a topic that he just pulled out of thin air, but it's been going on for forever pretty much. So I just think, you know, it's Lane being Lane, maybe a poor way to explain it, but he's just wish he would keep his mouth shut, but that's not going to happen. But it just kind of goes back, and we talk a lot about this internally at The Athletic, his whole redemption thing at Ole Miss, and, you know, there's that third, that 30 for 30, wasn't a 30 for 30, it was the E, whatever, the interview they did with him and how just his life has changed and the people, he needed Ole Miss, Ole Miss needed him. He's full of BS, and he's going to do what's best for him, and his act will run its course at LSU in a few years. He'll probably win a bunch of games, but LSU fans in 5 years are going to find a reason to hate him.
Yeah, I guess he leaves a trail of disaster wherever he leaves. It seems like Lane Kiffin, and I don't think he really, you know, and it's sad to say, I don't think he really cares, Mitch.
Right, I agree, Derek. Yeah,
he just goes about his business and goes on to the next job. You know, I guess if you're going to be that way, you're going to leave a trail like that. You got your conscience can't be stuck in one place in that regards. Now we're watching Tyler Tanner on television, and he hit 2 3-pointers, and Adam asked the question. I think it was Adam, but it was off air. You know, how should Vanderbilt fans look at sort of this with Tyler Tanner? Do they want him to do well in this?
No.
Or do they want him to do bad but come back to Vandy? I want the kid to do well, but I do want him to come back to Vandy. What do you think this ultimately comes down to?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And, you know, I think everyone, whether you're a Vanderbilt fan or not, if you live in Nashville, you know, like, he's a great kid. Everyone wants what's best for Tyler Tanner. But if you live here or you're a Vanderbilt fan, you want to see him at Vanderbilt next year. That's obvious. And he will have the same opportunity next year and maybe in a better position if he does come back. But that's for him to decide whether he wants to go now or not. I mean, you guys know the whole drill. It's a very good draft. It's a very point guard heavy draft, so that in theory is kind of pushing him down the food chain, so to speak. If he were to come back, I think he would be better. He would get bigger and he would get stronger. I think his shooting needs to improve a little bit. His numbers in the SEC tailed off a little bit. He drastically improved his shot from freshman year to sophomore year, and I think he'll continue to be better. I don't know enough about the draft. Like, playing in the 5-on-5 game, not everyone does it, but – like, I don't know enough about the process. Like, oh, he hit 2 threes. GMs are, like, writing notes. I think it's more about your body of work throughout the season, especially when you're playing a league like the SEC. They have seen him against the elite players in the country. Now, maybe if he's a mid-major player, you would judge what he's doing in these five-on-five scrimmages a little bit more because he's finally playing elite competition. So, and you guys know what it comes down to. It could just needs one team to fall in love with him and say, if you're there, we're going to pick you. So my gut feeling is he'll be back at Vanderbilt next year. No one really seems to know. There's no like inside information out there. He's going to go through the process and make a decision in a few weeks.
Now, how does this team look with Tyler Tanner back, and how does it look without him coming back?
It looks quite a bit better with him. It's not rocket science.
Are they still a competitor? Because I think they have a chance to win the conference with Tyler, but I still think they're a competitive team because I believe Byington is a really good coach. Yeah. I think they're still a competitive team. How do you see that?
I agree. I think they are a top 15 team with Tyler Tanner back, maybe even better. I think Byington did another very good job in the portal. Without him, they will obviously need someone to step up and be the alpha of that team. Now, I really like the guard they got from Washington State, Ace Glass, combo guard. Would probably have to handle the ball a little bit more, but he showed the ability to shoot the ball from the outside as a freshman, high usage player. The kid they got from Auburn, Sebastian Williams Adams, has a bright future. There'd just be a lot more unknowns if Tyler Tanner doesn't come back. But if he's back, obviously you've got, one of the best players in the country, and that gives you a head start on a lot of teams out there.
How many players are still in the portal right now, Mitch? Like if they have to move on without him, if you look into the portal, what do you find if you're looking for a point guard?
Not much. I think that's why you're seeing all these teams go international. LSU has, a lot was made of that roster with Will Wade that he only had one player for a few, about a month. They're bringing a lot of international players. I don't know about admissions issues and all that stuff. I mean, Vanderbilt clearly has international athletes. It's not like they can't get them in. But if they feel like they need another point guard, that's the route they would probably have to go. Obviously, who knows what's out there. Now, T.O. Barrett, the transfer from Missouri, is a point guard and would be thrust into a more prominent role. Right now, on paper, he's probably more of a third guard, although he started for Missouri last year. So they've got a freshman coming in. From Washington, D.C., pretty highly recruited kid, drawing a blank on his name right now. But I think regardless, they expect him to be part of the rotation next year. So they will have point guards on the roster if Tyler Tanner does not come back.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. Mitch, another good article in The Athletic today, and you have good perspective on this because you have a son that goes to Wake Forest here. But David Ubben had sort of the latest trend of how you generate revenue on a college campus, and you try to recreate what the Braves have. For people that have been to a Braves game in the last few years at their relatively new park at Truist, they have what's called the Battery. That concept seems to be something that's in motion on a lot of campuses right now.
Yeah, Wake Forest was one of the examples. Tennessee, obviously, prominent locally, is doing it. It's just we're in the era of revenue creation, and schools need to create as much revenue from all these different sources as possible. A lot of these schools own the land. So obviously they're spending millions and hundreds of million dollars to build these, whether it's apartments or retail space, but they own the land and, they will reap the rewards from that if all goes well. I mean, there were a couple of good examples like Florida State. I think there was an example there where there was basically between the football stadium and the basketball arena, wasn't the best neighborhood, but they owned all that land and they built some stuff there. If you've been to Wake Forest, it's off campus. It's about a mile from campus, and there's really nothing there. It's just the baseball, football, and basketball arena. There's really nothing around it, so they're really trying to build that up and make people go to a game, stay there, eat dinner, all that stuff. So it's just schools being creative, trying to raise as much money as possible.
That's pretty cool. Mitch, we were, I think a lot of people, whether you're – Vanderbilt fan or not, we're intrigued, just if you're a baseball fan, something you've probably never seen before, the ball that got hit into the fog and the protocols from there against Missouri. It just seems like in this day and age, you can get a pretty certain feel for whether a ball went over the fence or not. And I guess every sport with technology runs into challenges like this, but what do you think about what happened to Vanderbilt on Friday night?
Yeah, so we'll never know what the umps on the field could see. because, you know, we're on TV and you've seen all the angles and all that stuff. And how good of you the first or second base on pad. But, you know, clearly they didn't see it go over the wall. We all know, you know, by the way it came off the bat, it looks like it would have gone out. You saw the TrackMan data, which the umpires don't have that access to immediately. And even if they did, I don't know if they're allowed to use it. So I know a lot of people were upset, like, how could they overturn it? Well, replay didn't overturn it. An ump on the field did the little finger thing like that's a home run. But that wasn't the final call. They got together and they ruled ground rule double. And then there wasn't enough evidence to overturn it. That's what the SEC statement said the next day. That explained it. It doesn't necessarily make it was the right decision. I think it was the home run. I mean, I think the TrackMan data wouldn't lie there, and I was watching it. It just looks like it. But I have access to True Media, which has video of every three camera angles of every pitch in college baseball, like literally in every game. And I've looked at it in my little Zapruder film trying to find the ball and all that stuff. And you can't tell. You really can't tell. So, I mean, I think it was the wrong decision. I think Vanderbilt has a right to be upset about it, but there's nothing they could do about it.
So, Mitch, to wrap it up, that was a tough loss, tough weekend in a tough season for Vanderbilt. It's been really there's been a lot of adversity that they've had to try to deal with on a lot of fronts, but the net result looks like they are on the outside looking in for the NCAA tournament. So, for people that really haven't followed, and this may be news to them, what happened?
Basically, the pitching was bad due largely to a lot of injuries. You know, Austin Nye, who's a top potential first rounder in the 27 draft, made two starts and got hurt, Tommy John surgery. England Bryan, who was kind of their fourth pitcher, he got hurt. Basically, you know, five key pitching injuries. And what that did was force them to rely on a lot of freshmen, which it's not just wise to do no matter how talented they are. Last year in SEC games, Vanderbilt, 5% of its innings were pitched by freshmen. This year, it's 25%. So they got some kids that I think are going to be pretty good. They're just put in high leverage or high pressure situations, starting games where they probably shouldn't be starting. So the ironic thing is that fans for the last two or three years, have been complaining about the offense, the lack of power. Jason Esposito comes in, Vanderbilt's fifth in the nation in home runs, among the league leaders in runs scored and all that. And the pitching, which is usually such a strength of this program, really wasn't good enough this year. And that's why they're not, barring, you know, if they beat some good teams en route to the SEC championship game, maybe, but right now it looks like they need to win the SEC tournament to make the NCAA tournament.
Mitch Light has been our guest on D Mace, Vingan and Donick. And one thing to make clear, one texter after hearing Mitch talking about his experience at the Vanderbilt Hustler texted, he writes for Hustler? No, Mitch. Mitch is
no, there's not, somebody new to town.
Mitch exactly. is not a fan of Larry Flint, as far as I can tell. He's referring to the Vanderbilt Hustler, the school newspaper, not the naughty magazine.
No comment.
All right, Mitch.
No comment.
We'll talk to you soon.
Writes for Hustler.
Yes.
Adam, I will be – I'm ready if we want to do the Patriot League hour at 7 o'clock.
Okay, sounds good. We'll talk to Chase.
Riveting.
All right.
That used to be the line back in the day before magazines were big, that some people would say, yeah, I got Hustler. For the articles.
Yeah, right.
You know, Playboy actually did some really good journalism. 615-737-1025.
That's what they say.
1025. Coming up next, I want to piggyback off of a conversation I was a part of yesterday on Robbie and Rex Road about something happening in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll discuss that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.